Following are comments on John Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, Act 1. Act 1, Scene 1. A prince's court is like a common fountain. Antonio, just returning from the court of the French king, Louis XII, tells Delio how impressed he is with that ruler's reparation of his political environment. At the beginning of the play, in Act 1, Scene 1, Antonio tells his friend Delio that he considers the French court a model to emulate. Secrecy and sycophants have been banished from King Louis XII's routine. And his court, says Antonio, is like, quote-unquote, a common fountain whence should flow pure silver drops in general. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 12 through 13. Honesty, that is, should flow down to the entire population, and Louis is trying to ensure that that is how his palace affects his country. Conversely, Antonio insists, if the fountain is corrupted at its source, the entire society will suffer. The Methuen New Mermaids editor points out that here Webster may be echoing the English writer Thomas Eliot, spelled E-L-Y-O-T, who also used this common fountain metaphor to describe courtly environments. Webster is careful to establish the values of his main characters early because that helps us later in the play when we must judge the actions they take in context. Webster would have us understand right away that Antonio is at heart a decent man who values honesty and good order in society. Still in Act 1, Scene 1, I have done you better service than to be slighted thus. Daniel de Bozola, one of the play's most complicated, sinister characters, assails the cardinal about the difficulty of his circumstances. Daniel de Bozola is another kind of man, one as ancient, really, as Homer's Thersites. Antonio labels him to Delio, quote-unquote, the only court Gaul. Act 1, Scene 1, line 23. Bozola, then, is a sour presence, a scold, a servant with a sense of injured merit. He insists, correctly, that he has made himself useful to the cardinal, even getting himself condemned to the galleys for a murder he supposedly committed at the cardinal's behest. But now he's been hung out to dry. Quote unquote, I have done you better service than to be slighted thus, he tells the cardinal. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 29 through 30. Bozola has little regard for either the cardinal or Ferdinand, saying subsequently to Antonio, he and his brother are like plum trees that grow crooked over standing pools. They are rich and o'erladen with fruit, but none but crows, pies, and caterpillars feed on them. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 48 through 50. What does a lowly character like himself get for helping them? No more than the crutches that the wounded soldier gets for his country's thanks. Quote unquote. A kind of geometry is his last for supportation, says Bozola. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 58 through 59. Antonio remarks to Delio when Bozola leaves that, quote unquote, 'tis great pity he should be thus neglected. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 70 through 71. He instantly recognizes the strength of Bozola's character, his virtu, spelled V-I-R-T-U, with accent grave, if not this virtue in the moral sense, and he realizes that such a man is dangerous if not given his due. Bozola should have some office to assuage his feelings and fill his time productively. Antonio says, quote unquote, want of action breeds all black malcontents, and their close rearing, like moths in cloth, do hurt for want of wearing. Act 1, Scene 1, lines 76 through 78. That is, as the New Mermaid's editor's note suggests, such men do harm because they stay hidden, and no one notices them until it's too late, and the damage is already done. It is clear by now that Bozola is more complex, more multidimensional than a stage villain or stock court gall. He professes himself unable to wield flattery, but as for using secrecy to serve himself and other wicked men, that turns out to be another matter. Bozola will become a key actor in a drama of which he by no means approves. Act 1, Scene 2. Let all sweet ladies break their flattering glasses and dress themselves in her. After giving Delio a strongly negative description of the cardinal and Frederick, Antonio offers him a glowing portrait of the Duchess. In Act 1, Scene 2, after taking part in a cheerful dialogue with several characters that sounds like something straight out of Castiglione's Book of the Courtier, Antonio gets down to offering Delio his own perspective on the cardinal and Frederick. The cardinal, says he, is a complex man, but deep down he believes him to be, quote-unquote, a melancholy churchman, Act 1, Scene 2, line 68. He employs spies and sets traps for his enemies with the best of the Machiavells, and lost his shot at the papacy by playing the game too well. Antonio balances this scorching view with the summation, quote-unquote, some good he hath done. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 76 through 77. As for Duke Frederick of Calabria, Antonio has little good to say about him either. He calls the man, quote-unquote, a most perverse and turbulent nature. Act 1, Scene 2, line 79. Like the cardinal, he is a man who attends to the intelligence that his spies gather and deals harshly with his foes. A good summation of Antonio's guided tour of these men's souls would be that both are typical of their station and class, warped by power, Ferdinand perhaps somewhat more, even, than his brother the cardinal. These are not people we would cross lightly. Antonio describes the illustrious Duchess of Malfi in a more wholesome way. He suggests that she is of a very different temper than her two devious brothers. In her countenance, he says, quote-unquote, there speaketh so divine a countenance as cuts off all lascivious and vain hope. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 109 through 110. She is the paragon, he insists, of a good and noble woman. Quote-unquote, let all sweet ladies break their flattering glasses and dress themselves in her. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 114 through 115. His summation of her is the lovely line, quote-unquote, she stains the time past, lights the time to come. Act 1, Scene 2, line 119. Without meaning to undercut Antonio, for the Duchess is a wonderful and admirable character, we may as well note here that she is not the angel that Antonio takes her for. As we will soon see, she is not interested in playing the role of sanctified lady. She is strong, like a man. Pardon the Renaissance sexism for a moment, and she will follow her own desires, whatever the consequences. She is not a pale Madonna. The Duchess's tragedy stems from the brutal fact that in tragedy, strong women, like the Duchess, or like, say, Clytemnestra in the Oresteia, for that matter, are often forced to resort to subterfuge to attain their ends, and then they are castigated for doing so, and punished with lethal force. So there is more to this great lady than the dazzling exterior that meets the eye and the decorum that she, as a ruler, observes. No less a sovereign than King James I had as his personal motto, quote-unquote, qui nescit dissimulare, nescit regnare. Whoever doesn't know how to dissimulate also doesn't know how to govern. Queen Elizabeth I, too, passed that test with ease. She kept her counsel close, for decades cleverly maintained a cult of the Virgin Queen, and in her dress and makeup regimen, she kept up the facade of youth to the very end of her life of 69 years. Whose throat must I cut? Ferdinand and the Cardinal provide the bitter, disillusioned ex-con Bozola with respectable employment, and, at the same time, rope him into spying on his new employer, the Duchess. Still in Act 1, Scene 2, Ferdinand and the Cardinal are busying themselves with reinforcing the surveillance state that it seems already existed in Malfi. Ferdinand drops in to visit the Duchess and requests that she offer the ex-con Bozzola the important post of provisorship of her horses, and she immediately accepts. She knows who the fellow is, but apparently doesn't suspect her brothers of planting him as a spy in her midst. Unfortunately, that's exactly what they are both doing. Ferdinand makes sure, at the Cardinal's prompting, to hire Bozzola as a spy answerable to him as well. Bozzola is to watch over the Duchess and, if possible, find out which men she favors. The Duke does not want his sister to remarry and produce an heir, since that would apparently eliminate the possibility of his inheriting her lands. He tells Bozzola bluntly, quote unquote, "She's a young widow. I would not have her marry again." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 164 through 165. As for Bozzola, his question to Ferdinand, "Whose throat must I cut?" says much for his complexity. Act 1, Scene 2, line 158. He knows what he's getting into, genuinely disapproves of it, and will do it anyway. He's trapped by his need to go through corrupt men to earn himself a secure place. In his essay, Of Great Place, Sir Francis Bacon wrote, quote unquote, "By indignities, men come to dignities." True, no doubt. Still, it must burn Bozzola that when more nobly born men engage in knavery, they rise to great heights, while his scope for improvement is much narrower, no matter what wicked deeds he does for such men. Bozzola deeply resents the sense of obligation he feels when these same men, the Cardinal and Ferdinand in particular, toss some humble bone of status his way. Quote unquote, "Oh, that to avoid ingratitude for the good deed you have done me, I must do all the ill man can invent." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 183 through 185. He says bitterly to Ferdinand, quote unquote, "Say then my corruption grew out of horse dung. I am your creature." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 196 through 197. "Will you hear me? I'll never marry." When Ferdinand and the Cardinal visit the Duchess to lay down the law with her about remarriage, she flatly lies to them. The moment they depart, she woos and wins Antonio for her new husband. Still in Act 1, Scene 2, with Bozzola duly trapped and in place as useful to the brothers, Ferdinand and the Cardinal visit the Duchess and warn her not to remarry, in the end casting her as a quote-unquote lusty widow who ought not trust her own predilections or impulses, and bidding her carefully look to her honor. Act 1, Scene 2, line 248. Along the way, Ferdinand assails her with some prime hypocrisy, saying, quote unquote, "Women like that part which, like the lamprey, hath ne'er a bone in it." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 244 through 245. Fie, Ferdinand, fie. To Ferdinand and the Cardinal, in truth, their sister's personal morality is obviously not their true reason for posturing as they do. As Ferdinand has already admitted, it has everything to do with the possibility of getting her lands. In fee simple, both men want to control their powerful sister, not make her a saint. It doesn't work. To their faces, she mocks them with, quote unquote, "I think this speech between you both was studied. It came so roundly off." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 237 through 238. The Duchess has already promised them with a straight face, quote unquote, "Will you hear me? I'll never marry." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 210 through 211. The moment they leave, she muses, quote unquote, If all my royal kindred lay in my way unto this marriage, I'd make them my low footsteps. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 249 through 251. And she concludes with, quote unquote, "Let old wives report, I winked and chose a husband." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 256 through 257. The Duchess may link herself to the common women of her realm by using such proverbs, but this is also the beginning of her troubles. Whatever the true motives of her slippery brothers, the Duchess's position as a ruler demands that she set an example as a wise prince. She must not seem merely to be a headstrong private individual. That would be scandalous and put her in danger. It almost goes without saying that there's a strong element of sexism in this kind of formulation. Would a man be held to exactly the same standard? Probably not. It's hard to deny that the Duchess engages in conduct that even her faithful servant, Cariola, at the scene's end, describes as, quote-unquote, fearful madness. Act 1, Scene 2, line 412. The Duchess makes it plain in speaking to Cariola that she understands exactly how risky to her reputation and control of the duchy her present actions are. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 257 through 259. The part of Act 1, Scene 2 in which the Duchess woos and wins her steward Antonio is the example to which Cariola refers as fearful madness. Her magnificent and successful effort is anxiety-provoking for Antonio as well, who, at first, doesn't know how to take his sovereign's strangely playful, almost deceptive suit to him. The Duchess herself proclaims the misery of the great, who are, quote-unquote, forced to express our violent passions in riddles and in dreams, and leave the path of simple virtue, which was never made to seem the thing it is not. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 353 through 356. The Duchess is, as she admits, straying from the path of simple virtue, where direct correspondence between seeming and being is the command. She woos like a Machiavel, and pays little heed to the consequences for her as the chief officer of her state. It's one thing to practice secrecy for the state's benefit, but another to employ it for one's private ends. To act as she does entails the risk of losing respect and control as a prince. As mentioned before in these notes, there is also the matter of a woman's being forced to resort to secrecy and dissimulation, and then being punished for it when a man might actually be rewarded. As for Antonio, he understands that the appeal is partly to his desire for advancement from the position of steward. When she offers him her ring, he sees that, quote-unquote, a saucy and ambitious devil is dancing in this circle. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 318 through 319. He also says that if ambition is, quote-unquote, a great man's madness, it is much, much worse in a man of his ordinary stature. It is, quote-unquote, lunatic beyond all cure, as he says. Act 1, Scene 2, line 328 and line 332. But the Duchess of Malfi will have the man she wants. Her final pitch is all but irresistible. She declares herself to Antonio, quote-unquote, "This is flesh and blood, sir. 'Tis not the figure cut in alabaster kneels at my husband's tomb. Awake, awake, man." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 361 through 367 inclusive. The rest of the thought is equally masterful. Antonio can do no other but accept, which he wants to do anyway. He will marry this woman who will later say, as a tragic death befalls her, quote unquote, "I am Duchess of Malfi still." Act 4, Scene 2, line 134. Her insistence on marrying the man she loves flows from who she is, not from who the powerful men in her life want her to be. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, July 11th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from Webster's The Duchess of Malfi, I have relied on the Methuen New Mermaids 5th edition 2021.